It's Wednesday, the 24th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Costa Koufos. The Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Gretch N. Evans. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Gretch N. Evans and be a sponsor of the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. Thank you to Gretch or Mr. Evans or Miss Evans or whatever your name is. Thank you for sponsoring the podcast. It's much, much appreciated. And thank you to everyone who has done that. It goes a long way to making sure the show grows and stay and keeps going. So if you've got a spare 5 seconds, 10 seconds, or maybe 30 seconds it takes, go and leave a review on iTunes. I would much appreciate that. We are here to talk about the 5 games from Tuesday. We're going to be previewing the 10 games from Wednesday. So without further ado,
let's get to it.
Cool. Let's start with the Instagram and Facebook contests of the day. On Instagram, where you can follow me at redrock_bball, same as the Twitter account. We're looking at Brandon Jennings. How many points was Brandon Jennings going to score? Well, I don't think many of us foresaw Scott Skiles going and playing him at 11 minutes. Jennings scored 6 points. No one got that right. I'll talk about more on Skiles' wackiness later on. On Facebook, we were looking for Damian Lillard combined points and assists. Lillard scored over 30 points for the fifth consecutive game, the first Blazer to do that since the 1970-71 season. He had 38 in total. Three people got that right: Luke Fraser, Julio Torrijos, and Josh Allis. So congratulations to all you guys for getting the 38 correct for Damian Lillard. Also, the other day I had a contest about Derrick Rose, about how many missed field goals he was going to have, and I missed out on someone, and I got tweeted today by Billy Brine, and he got it right, and I forgot to shout him out. So on Instagram, he is at Billy Talented. He got it right, forgot about the shout out for him. So Billy, I do apologize. Here is your belated shout out. I hope you can forgive me. All right, let's look at the games. Let's look at the daily award. Actually, no, before we do that, sorry. For Wednesday's games, on Instagram, we're looking at Miles Turner, combined rebounds and blocks. And on Facebook, we're going to be looking at Vince Carter. Yes, going with the old and the young. Vince Carter, how many points will Vince score? Remember, he played 30 minutes in the last game, so he's getting a little bit of extra run in Memphis with Tony Allen not playing. So take that into consideration when making your guesses. Let's now look at the monstrous line of the night for Tuesday. And I'm going in the late game. There was quite a few options in that late game, but I went with CJ McCollum of the Portland Trail Blazers. He played 38 minutes as the Blazers got the victory over the Nets. They are on fire, Portland, at the moment. 34 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. He hit 5 triples, had a steal, and was ridiculously efficient, going 13 of 20 from the field. He also hit all 3 of his free throws. CJ McCollum is your monstrous line of the night. He's a top 20 player over the last 2 weeks. He's a top 30 guy over the course of the season. I must admit, I was skeptical of CJ McCollum this season to a degree. I thought for sure he had to be owned, for sure, but people were talking him up as being this superstar who honestly had never shown anything. And he'd showed a bit in the playoffs, and I was really keen on him in the playoffs, but to expect him to take such a big leap, it's very, very unlikely. If we look at his numbers, you can't really compare his numbers from his second season through to this season, because he's playing an extra 20 minutes a game. But if we look at it on a per 36 minute basis, he's improved everywhere. It's ridiculous. His scoring has gone from 15.7 points to 21.7 points. That's a big leap per 36. This is not minute related. This is all, you know, to do with the same minutes. We're talking per 36. It all balances out. He's improved his threes from 2 to 2.6. His rebounds have gone up from 3.4 to 3.7. His assists have almost doubled from 2.4 to 4.4, and he's playing less point guard this year. His steals have dropped a little, 1.6 down to 1.3, but he's increased his efficiency from 43.5 up to 44.5, and his free throws have gone from 69 up to 80. So basically, contributing in, and he's increased his three-point percentage by 1% as well. So every single statistical category, basically, with the exception of steals, he's increased this year, and not to do with his minutes. So he's taken on a bigger role, more usage, and improved as well. That has all the recipes in my mind for a most improved player award. There might be some other guys out there who are looking at that award, but McCollum, it's not just the increased minutes. He has actually become a better player, a much, much better player. And really, even the most optimistic person, I don't think, could have thought McCollum would be a top 30 guy this year, or that the Blazers would be above 500, but that's where both of those guys currently are. The waiver wire line of the night goes to the Washington Wizards' Jared Dudley, who started again and played 27 minutes. He had 18 points all on three-pointers, 6 triples, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal on 6 of 11 shooting. Continues to play. Look, he was playing 30 minutes before Markieff Morris arrived. He's down to the mid-20s, but his last three games have been really impressive. I'm not sure that he has to be held onto in 12-team leagues, but I'm definitely not dropping him now. I think that we see Markieff start to get more integrated into things. I don't think Dudley hits 6 threes very often. As good as a three-point shooter as he is, this is not a common occurrence for him. And the other thing, he's increased recently as well over his last 2 weeks. He's at 3.8 assists a game when he's at 2.2 on the season. So there's a few things that look set to regress with Jared Dudley. Sure, own him now and see what goes on. But I imagine that his minutes will, and a couple will knock off and a couple will go on to Markieff, and his production will start to slide. But for now, he's definitely putting in a big performance, and I can't see why you wouldn't own him unless you're just really thinking long term, like a couple of weeks out. Because at the moment, he's got the role and he's got the production, but I'm not all that confident in it sustaining for all that long. The young gun of the night, we go down to the Utah Jazz, and my boy Rod Hood played 36 minutes. He had a fantastic line when you really look at it. 18 points, 3 triples, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, and he went 6 of 10 from the field. I'm a big Rod Hood fan. He is a top 50 guy over the last month, a top 60 guy over the last 2 months. Yes, he'll probably lose 1 or 2 minutes when Alec Burks comes back, but that by no means do I think that means that Hood is going to be droppable or anything like that. He is a key cog in this team. He is hitting over his last 2 months, where he's averaging 33 minutes, 2.5 triples, 18 points, 4 rebounds, 2.5 to 3 assists, almost a steal, 44 and 89%. They're very, very impressive numbers from Hood, and he's taken his game up a tremendous leap from his rookie seasons to his sophomore season, and I think that he's going to continue to get better. He's a player that he's a bit older, but I do really think that Rod Hood has got a lot more room to grow and develop his game, and he can be that guy. It's probably not a great comparison, but a Joe Johnson-y sort of player who can score, but then can also do some ball handling and be a 4-assist sort of guy, a 4 and a 5 rebound sort of guy. Hits you threes, he'll do that more than Joe probably. Get some more steals and be a super free throw shooter. He's at 87% on the season. And if he gets his attempts up from the 2.9 they are now and starts going at, say, 4 or 5 attempts a game, that's a massive boost for fantasy leagues. For now, it's still really good, but it could be really, really impressive if he was able to get to the rack a little bit more. And that's something that generally comes to players a little bit further on in their career. The dud of the night, we're staying with Utah, and we're heading to Rod's teammate, Rudy Gobert. Not the best night from Rudy. 26 minutes, 2 points, 3 rebounds, no blocks on 0 of 3 shooting. And then he also proceeded to have a stinker from the free throw line, going only 2 of 4. He has been somewhat of a disappointment, I'd say, this season. He's averaging 10 and 10, which is not bad, but we look at what he did in terms of per 36 production compared to last year. His scoring is down, his rebounding is down, his steals are down, his assists are down, his blocks are down, his field goal percentage is down, and his free throw percentage is down. That's a big regression right across the board for Gobert. He was a guy that I was very concerned about in terms of his free throw impact coming into the season. People weren't counting on him as being a punt free throw guy. Now, he's not quite a punt free throw guy, but a negative Z score of 1.6 is not ideal, and it does take a little bit of work to recover from that. 60% on 5 attempts, that's significant. The field goal percentage is not over 60, which it was last year. The blocks aren't, they're okay, 2.4 blocks, but you were hoping him to be a 2.5, 3 block a game guy. And the lack of offense means that if you picked him in the second round, you needed to be really, really cautious of that scoring. That was something I preached excessively in the offseason, because he just wasn't going to provide any points. You needed to draft big scorers around him or punt points. I still think that Gobert is a really useful fantasy player, but that top of the second round spot for him, it felt high at the time. And it's turned out that that's exactly what it is. Let's look at the optimal or the perfect, yeah, we'll call it the optimal DFS lineup for Tuesday's games. At point guard, you would have had Pat Beverley at 27.6 and Don Sloan at 28. They're not big scores, but it enables you to get some other players in at the salaries, and that's all what the optimal lineup's about. Yes, Damian Lillard, John Wall had much bigger games than that, but it's all about working it in with the salaries. At shooting guard, Rod Hood, 38.3, and CJ McCollum, 48. Already touched on both those guys' games. At small forward, Gordy Haywood, 43.9. He was amazing. I think he missed one shot and was a half-court heave from memory. And Rudy Gay had 46 points, a big night for him against the Nuggets. Didn't predict him to be that big, but he was. Nerlens Noel, 39.2. Really, really impressive player. And it was a nice situation for him. And Derek Favors against the Rockets. Big Rockets bump for Favors, 43.4. And at center, Brook Lopez, 56.5. He is absolutely dominating at the moment. I think he's had a couple of 30-point games in his last three or four. 30 real-life points, not fantasy points. Really putting up some big numbers. A big double-double for him today. Nice a block, a couple of steals. Big performance from Brook. I think he's one of the more underrated fantasy players and real-life players in the NBA. That lineup would have gotten you 370.9 points. Now it's time for a quick word from our sponsor for today, and that is SeatGeek. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek's a great place to go and have a look. I'm not in the States, as you know. I'm sitting at home in Melbourne, Australia, here, watching the games on TV. But I always look out and see, like, how much are tickets to this? I want to eventually, at some point, go into this massive road trip over in the States, traveling to each stadium and going and seeing each team over the course of a month or 6 weeks, and look at the pricing and look at my ability to get tickets, and SeatGeek's the best place to do that. SeatGeek has taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets, and they pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if the ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app. It's free. It's an app. It's very easy. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code REDROCK. It is one word. It is written on the screen if you're watching this video, and I'm sure you don't need much help spelling red and rock. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've done that and after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code REDROCK today. And again, if you don't have a pressing need to buy tickets, go and download the app. Use that promo code. It's your way of being able to support the podcast and showing and saying, I listen to Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. I like what Josh provides, and I want to show support to the show. You don't have to buy anything. I would appreciate if it would be good if you did, because you'd save money and you get to see an exciting event. But it shows that you're supporting the podcast. So download that app, use that promo code, and we're done. Win for everyone. You get money back on tickets. You get cheaper tickets. You get more podcasts. You get hopefully higher quality podcasts. The podcast keeps going. Everybody wins. I don't see a loser in that situation. Let's now bring up these games and talk about them in a more in-depth detail. Bring that up on the screen for you guys watching along on YouTube. There we go. All right, the first game of the night. The Orlando Magic and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Magic with the big win on the road. Vic Oladipo played 41 minutes, 22, 4 and 4, 3 steals and a 3. So he is firmly in Scott Skiles' good graces, playing big minutes at the moment. And when we look back at this Orlando Magic season, we look back at the start of the season, we're going to go, what the hell was going on with Skiles playing Oladipo 27 minutes a game off the bench? Because now he is absolutely flying. His fantasy value is sky high. He's got a potential to be a top 20 guy down the stretch here. Big, big night from Oladipo. Hopefully you're able to hold on to him at the start of the year or buy extremely low, because it's working out in your favor now. Evan Fournier, 43 minutes. 21, 3 and 4, 2 steals and 3 threes. Big night from him. Super hot shooting, which won't continue. 8 of 13, but he has to be owned everywhere, obviously. And Nick Vucevic went 35 and 9 added 4 assists and was a monster. 13 of 21 shooting and 9 of 9 from the free throw line. Those three guys, Fournier, Oladipo, and Vucevic, did not miss a free throw. And the lowest field goal percentage amongst those guys was Oladipo, who went 6 of 12 for 50%. 62 for Fournier, 62 for Vucevic. So just massive efficiency from those guys. Aaron Gordon, 30 minutes. This looks like it's going to be him. He's going to be 30 minutes. He's not getting 35 minutes a game. He's going to be a 30-minute player. And that's fine. 11 and 11, 3 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. He's going to hurt you, your efficiency at times. He was 4 of 10 from the field. He was 3 of 6 from the free throw line. That is going to be something that happens occasionally, but you're going to get nice, well, big rebounding numbers. You're going to get good defensive numbers. He can pass the ball. He can hit threes occasionally. He has to be a must-own guy. Ersan Ilyasova is sitting into that 17 to 20-minute role. 19 here, 10 and 8 with 2 triples. That means that he's more of a 14 to 16 team lead guy. And the point guard mess. I said I was going to talk about it before. You cannot understand what Scott Skiles is going to do. Scott Skiles' players don't understand what Scott Skiles is going to do. I'm going to bank that Scott Skiles doesn't know what Scott Skiles is going to do. We've seen the last 2 games of Brandon Jennings playing more than Lord Alfred Payton, playing down the stretch, playing 25 minutes and 24 minutes and getting hot. Today, not so much. 11 minutes for Jennings, 6 points with 3 assists. I said yesterday I was okay with going in and moving and adding him and seeing how it pans out. I said yesterday I'd added him. I dropped Archie Goodwin for him. And then today before the game started, I dropped Jennings and added Shelvin Mack. And I think that's a move that you definitely want to make if you've got Jennings, because Skiles is so unpredictable. He's got 4 point guards now. And who knows which one is going to get minutes on each day. Lord Alfred Payton played the most minutes. He played 20. He had 3 points. Had 8 assists, 1 rebound, and terrible shooting. At this point, he is not a must-hold, I don't think. He'll fit certain teams, definitely, but by no stretch is he, I absolutely have to hold on to Alfred Payton, because Skiles is just irrational, and he's there's nothing worse than dealing with an irrational coach, because we don't know what's going to happen. It all looked like, okay, Jennings is working in. He's going to start to play minutes. He's going to be the preferred guy. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe we'll play CJ Watson 19 minutes. And for a guy who'd missed, you know, 50 games for a phantom calf injury. I've got a comment come through from Blangtang, who's watching the video, saying those ad drops are for tiny leagues. Which ad drops? Blangtang, if you're still watching, how do you mean ad drops are for tiny leagues? What ad drops did I do? I'm a bit confused. Anyway, CJ Watson, 3-5 with 2 steals. He's not worth owning in most 12-team leagues either. Mario Hezonja, he has been really limited. There was a chance that this would be an opportunity for him to break out and start to put up big minutes, but that's clearly not happening. He's barely got over 20 minutes since the trades went down. 11 minutes, 5 points with a steal. He can be left for dynasty formats and deeper leagues. On the Philadelphia 76ers, Nerlens Noel continues to be really, really good. 16 and 11 in 32 minutes, 4 assists, 2 steals, 1 block on 6 of 9 shooting. He shoots 60% basically every game at the moment and just continues to solidify his rankings as an upper echelon fantasy player. Jahlil Okafor, only 26 minutes for him, did battle some foul trouble. 17 points, 2 blocks is nice, but only 2 rebounds, no steals, no assists, no threes, and 1 of 2 free throws, 8 of 13 from the field is good. Continues to just to be that back end fantasy guy. Hollis Thompson played 29 minutes, 14, 3, and 2 with 3 triples. And anyone who was very quick to go and drop Ish Smith, which are seriously people were dropping Ish Smith, he bounced back. He played 27 minutes, 22 points, 1 rebound, 5 assists, and 2 3-pointers. You don't drop Ish Smith. Yes, he's had some poor games, and his ranking looks deflated because of his horrible percentages, but you already know that if you own Ish Smith. And you have taken that into account, and you should have been able to deal with it. And if you haven't been able to deal with it, you shouldn't have been owning him, and you should have traded him on. But I don't think you needed to drop him after a couple of poor games. He bounced back here in this one nicely. Now, Bob Cove played just 27 minutes, but was still productive. Again, he's doing it in limited minutes at the moment. 12 and 4, 2 triples, an assist, and a steal. Hard to complain about that, and I still think that he should be owned in leagues as well. Isaiah Cannon had a pretty hot shooting night, 5 of 7 for 12 points with 2 triples and 4 rebounds. And Hollis Thompson had maybe his best game of the season, 14, 3 and 2 with 3 triples and a steal. I don't mind Hollis in a 16-team format, maybe a 14-team format, because he's getting minutes in the high 20s, especially with Jakar Sampson gone now. That's another player out of that wing rotation. And Thompson, over the last couple of years, Brett Brown has favored him as that guy who approaches 30 minutes perhaps more often than most. Nick Stauskas had 5 points in 24 minutes. He's not a fantasy consideration, and TJ McConnell suffered a sprained ankle. He played 17 minutes, which is about his usual, but it looks like that's going to cost him at least a game. 8 points and four assists, so we're going to see more Kendall Marshall into the action, I'd say, in the next game for the Sixers. That is more of a 20-team to 18-team league ad. If he gets 18 minutes, though, Kendall Marshall, there's no reason he can't drop six assists, but with a 10-game slate on tomorrow, in a standard league, are you going to have room to, say, stream him in to get those five or six assists? I'm going to say probably not. Jeremy Grant went 7-7 with two assists and a block. He's prone to do that. He's very hard to own in an ongoing 12-team sense because of his inconsistencies. The next game, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Washington Wizards. Anthony Davis went from 59 points down to 9 points. He still had 20 rebounds, though. 3 assists, 2 steals, and 1 block. 3 of 9 shooting. Clearly not the same guy that he was against Detroit, but that's really not terrible. He still got your 20 rebounds. He got 2 steals. He had a block. Not the same offensive performance, obviously. Ryan Anderson got hot. He went 7 of 11 and had 16 and 4, added 2 steals and 2 threes in 25 minutes. And Drew Holiday continues to be very good. 32 minutes, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists, not so good shooting. Norris Cole, I feel vindicated. He is terrible. He is just really bad. 18 minutes for Cole. He started, didn't start the second half. That honor went to Tony Douglas. Why don't you just start Drew Holiday? I don't know, but it doesn't matter because he's playing 32 minutes. But Tony Douglas had 11, 4, and 1 with 2 blocks. With 2 steals. He's more of a... I think you look at Tony Douglas in an 18-team, 16-team league sort of area. Bryce DeJean-Jones is starting and playing 21 minutes. Is there a worse starting backcourt in the NBA than Norris Cole and Bryce DeJean-Jones? There isn't. There is not a worse starting backcourt. Here's another question. Is there a worse starting backcourt in the NBA in the last 5 years than Norris Cole and Bryce DeJean-Jones? I'm sure there is one, but that is horrifically bad. Anyway, DeJean-Jones, I thought he had appeal for some deeper formats, but now he's even a guy that I struggle to consider in an 18 to 20 team league. No Omer Asik with his ankle problem. Alexi Ajinsa started, didn't play anywhere near enough minutes for my liking. Considering Kendrick Perkins got 18 and Ajinsa gets 17, that is blasphemous. 7-4 for Ajinsa, and Perkins went 2-4 there. Even with Asik out there, still only deep league considerations. Not much else to talk about there, unless you love Luke Babbitt hitting 3 points in his 3 minutes. And if you do, you probably need some help. With the Wizards, Marcin Gortat continues his super strong second half form. 30 minutes, 21-11, 1 steal, and 2 blocks on 10 of 16 shooting. I think we got a comment back. I'm just going to check this one here. No, wasn't. Sorry. My bad. Looking at these live comments coming, I thought it was our Blank Tang replying to me. Gortat, big game. Super strong second half from him. He started off the season slow, but a lot of people don't appreciate what he does in fantasy. I'm a big fan of Marcin Gortat. I know I just traded him away, as I mentioned the other day, and only my second trade for the season, but he's been great. He has been, and people will be surprised at this, he's been a top 40 player this year. He's averaging 14 and 10, but it's 1.3 blocks, 55% from the field, 73 from the line. He just does what he needs to do as a center, and he's a guy that I've got on stacks of my redraft leagues teams as well. Jared Dudley I've touched on already. Johnny Wall had a triple-double. 16, 12, and 11. 3 triples, 2 steals, 1 block. Not such good percentages. 5 of 17 and 3 of 5 from the line. But I think you can be a little bit forgiven there. John Wall is a guy that I do own on teams, and he was a guy that I targeted in my punt free throw teams. Not because he's a bad free throw shooter, but to get a guy who can get you 10 assists a game and whose value isn't buoyed or isn't built around his high free throw percentage, he was a guy that I did really target at the end of drafts, or end of the first round, sorry. Otto Porter just not getting it going at the moment. 6-5 with 2 steals and a 3. He still should be owned, but just in a bit of a slump. And Brad Beal on the bench again, but I'm going to say that that's because it was a back-to-back, or it's the first game of the back-to-back, and that's what the Wizards do. They'll play him 25 minutes in both games of the back-to-back, and then when it's a standalone game, he'll start and he'll play 32 minutes. That's been Randy Whitman's philosophy so far, and it's held true. 9 points with 5 assists, not a great night from Beal, but even in the games where he's played, say, 25, 26 minutes, 24 minutes, he's been really productive. So I'm not overly I'm not overly concerned. I would love him playing 32 each night, but his long-term health is more important than him playing an extra 6 minutes in a February back-to-back. Markieff Morris, only the 22 minutes, 6 points, but added 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 1 block. And that's exactly what he can do. He can contribute in multiple areas. If he goes to that, say, 12, where is it? If he goes to 12 points and 6 rebounds, and then adds 2 steals and 1 block, that's superb. I still own him. I haven't dropped him in any league where I had him. I want to give it at least a week or so, just maybe another week, maybe 10 more days, and see what happens. Because if he's stuck at 21 minutes, he will remain at that. If he's stuck at 21 minutes, he won't be a 12-team league guy. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. Garrett Temple started. He is just not worth the trouble for most leagues. It's got to be very, very deep to get involved there. And Ramon Sessions has played big minutes the last couple of games. But with Gary Neal and Alan Anderson close to returning, I don't think we're going to see 26 minutes for Ramon Sessions all that often moving forward. Nene went 8-9 in his 16 minutes, but we know the story with Nene. The Sacramento Kings and the Denver Nuggets, the second game in about the last 3 or 4 days. Rudy Gay, 16-10, but added 4 steals, 4 assists, and 3 blocks. A big defensive night. And Boogie Cousins loves playing against his former coach. 39-9, 2 triples and a steal, and 2 blocks. And big percentages from Boogie as well. 14 of 24 from the field, and 9 of 12 from the free throw line. Omri Caspi and Marco Ballinelli both returned from their dental work. Caspi had a good game, 14-9. Ballinelli, not so much. Ballinelli is really just a 16-team league guy or a 3-point stream specialist. Rajon Rondo, 4 points only, but 12 assists, 5 rebounds, a steal and a block. So still doing it in those other areas. And Willie Cauley-Stein, not getting enough minutes for me for standard leagues. 10-5 with a steal and 2 blocks is still really productive, but when it's most likely he's going to get 20 minutes or 21 minutes in a game, then it's hard to own that when there's going to be other guys out there more beneficial. Ben McLemore started and played 13 minutes. Quincy Acey started and played 13 minutes. Cool. I don't know why those guys play exclusively with each other. They do nothing. Collison got 32 minutes, and he's been on a run of getting 30-plus minutes. Some of that without Ballinelli, but Ballinelli obviously back here. 9-4-5 with a steal. He is a back-end 12-team league guy, even in a reserve role. On the Nuggets, I was talking about this yesterday. I think it was yesterday, or maybe it was the day before. Nikola Jokic. He's been dropped in plenty of leagues. And I said, I don't care if he plays 20 minutes a game or 24 minutes a game, because he's going to be productive. And we've seen it all season. He played 20 minutes because, and this is what's happened with him in the past, when he plays Boogie Cousins, the fouls rack up. He played 20 minutes. And in 20 minutes, he went 13-13, had 6 assists, 2 steals, and a 3. He was efficient from the field. He hit all 4 of his free throws. This guy is exceptionally good. I would say he is the third best rookie in this class. That's off the top of my head, behind Towns and Porzingis. He has been a revelation, and it disappoints me that he hasn't been able to play as many minutes as I would have liked for most of the season. He has to be owned. I can't see how you cannot own Nikola Jokic. And yes, there'll be times when he plays 20 minutes, but look what happened in 20 minutes. Imagine if it was 30. There was no Yusuf Nurkic in this one because he had a sore knee and he missed practice on Monday, so they didn't play him because he missed practice. That will be an issue with him. When he doesn't play, Joffrey Lavernier will get extra run. He had 23 minutes for 10-6. But when Nurkic plays, Lavernier will go down to single digits and won't be worth owning. Emmanuel Mudiay, only the 26 minutes here because DJ Augustine is playing a significant role. 22 minutes for Augustine. 10-3-4 with a steal and a 3. Now, Augustine is not a horrible add in 12-team leagues or anything that goes over 150 players deep. He's not a rock solid, I've got to add him and I've got to hold him and I've got to see what happens, but he's definitely usurped Jameer Nelson's role. Nelson was healthy in this one, didn't see the court. Now, that won't be the case all the time, but I think he's going to move into that second point guard role. I think he'll play a little bit of on the court with Mudiay as well. And he won't get 28 minutes. He won't play 30 minutes, but he'll play 20 plus most nights, and he can be a contributor in that sort of time, as we saw here, 10-3-4. In a 14-team league, it has to be owned across the board. In a 12-team league, it really depends, but he's not a horrible addition. Just think about him in he's playing the Brandon Jennings role of that backup who plays 21 to 24 minutes, but he's better than Brandon Jennings. He should be, you know, in that sort of conversation with Brandon Jennings. Moutier had 11 points, 4 assists, and a triple one, so not a bad night for him. Also, it's a good night when he has 0 turnovers, which is what happened here. Ken Fareed, I don't think he's ever going to approach 30 minutes again. 22 minutes here, 13 and 7, with a steal and a block, so that's still relatively productive, but he's a tough one for your standard leagues. I think he still probably has to be owned because of his ability to get high rebounding, but he just doesn't help in enough areas. Darrell Arthur played 25 minutes, and whenever he gets big minutes, he is productive. 14, 5, and 4, 4 triples, 2 steals. It's just hard to know when that's going to happen. Danilo Gallinari, not his best night. 17 points, but nothing else. And Will Barton chopped in with a very inefficient 18 points. Had 6 rebounds and 4 assists, but 6 of 18 shooting hurts his overall night. And Gaz Harris wasn't good either. 25 minutes for Harris. That's the lowest he's played in about the last week to 2 weeks. 4, 2, and 3 in 25 minutes. He can obviously be a lot better than that. The Houston Rockets and the Utah Jazz is the next game. Jim Harden, 44 minutes for Harden in the overtime. 42, 5, and 4. 2 steals, 2 triples. Big game from Harden. Really took it to the Jazz in a matchup that wasn't an easy one for him, so that's good news for Harden owners. Same with Trevor Ariza, who went 14, 1, and 4, had 4 steals and 4 triples. A bigger night, big night there. And Pat Beverly went 14, 3, and 4 with 3 steals and 2 threes. He's a 12-team league guy to me, Beverly, but it's not for everyone. And I probably have him marginally behind a guy like Shelvin Mack, but it really depends on your team. Talk about Mack soon. Dwight Howard, 13 and 16 with a steal and 3 blocks, and his typical 7 of 14 from the free throw line, but Dwight just doing what he does. Josh Smith started and is terrible. Terrence Jones came off the bench and is equally, if not more, terrible. Clint Capella played 13 minutes. Smith, Capella, and Jones, none of these guys should be owned in any sort of 12-team leagues. I can make a case for Capella in a 14. I don't think I can make one for Smith or for Jones in a league that deep. Jones is just a very, very bad player. Corey Brewer had 2 points and 3 steals in his 22 minutes. He is a deep league guy only. And Jason Terry had 8 points in 21 minutes. Ty Lawson also continues to be bad. Gordy Haywood, 28, 7, and 5. 3 triples for the Jazz. 1 steal, 40 minutes. A big game. Derek Favors went 19 and 12 with 2 steals and 3 blocks as well. So this Jazz core, I love the Jazz. I think they're a real exciting team. Shelvin Mack, second game for Utah, into the starting lineup, played 32 minutes. 17 points, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1 3. I think he should be owned in every league at the moment. It might not pan out, but I think you got to add him. If he's going to play 32 minutes, and he won't do that long term because Alec Burks will return and they'll cut some of that away from Mack. But Hal Neto played 8 minutes and he's no good. Trey Burke played 29 minutes. That was an overtime game. But Burke is also no good. Your Mack is the guy that I'm taking a flyer on. You can't get many 30-minute-a-game point guards, apart from Jose Calderon, sitting on your waiver wire. Now, he's not great, Shelvin Mack, but he's decent. He can be solid, and he can help you. I've added him in a couple of leagues, and I think you should definitely have a look at it and consider it and see how it goes. But there's always a caveat. And Matt Smith had a great tweet about this today. At this time of the year, there's no such thing as, you know, well, there is such thing because people will ask it, but rank these players or who's better in a vacuum. Who do I want from a pure value standpoint? It doesn't matter. There's no such thing as pure value because you're trying to win a league. I'm sure you're trying to win a league. Isn't that the idea of playing? Should I drop Alex Len and add Shelvin Mack? It depends. Do you want to lose a shitload of rebounds, field goal percentage, and blocks and add some assists and steals? Maybe, but it really depends on your team. Nice question coming here. Blank Tang again. Smashing through the live questions. This is regarding Shelvin Mack. So I'll go for this one. Is Mack better than Teague/Schroeder? No, he is not better than either of those guys. Not by a long shot. In terms of minutes, though, Mack looks like he'll get 27 to 30 minutes a game. Schroeder will probably get 18 to 20 minutes a game. Teague will get 29. So I'd probably rank them. Teague is the guy that I want. Schroeder, who is red hot at the moment, but it's really hard to keep up that production in 18 minutes a game. He'd be the guy that I'd have Mack slightly ahead of him just because I think that his role is more sustainable and his production can be more sustainable, and Schroeder next. But in terms of overall players, he's nowhere near the player of these guys. So that's an interesting question from Blank Tang. He had some other stuff there talking about Memphis and LA. I'll talk about that a little bit later, Blank Tang. Trey Burke did have 15 points in this one with 3 triples in 29 minutes, but it's only a deep league guy, only a deep league consideration that you need to really pay attention to him. And Hull Neto, if for some reason you own him, 8 minutes, 0 points, he's cooked. The Brooklyn Nets and the Portland Trailblazers. Brook Lopez, 36-10, 4 steals, 1 block, elite percentages. He is an absolute fantasy animal. And let's just hope for everyone's sake that he can stay healthy, because he can put up great numbers. He can be a top 20 guy. He is, in the last month, a top 10 player. For the season, he's a top 25 player. In the last month, I reckon none of you will know this, or some of you might, but he's averaging 24.5 points, 8.3 rebounds, and this is the guy who's criticized. He's soft. How can a big man not get rebounds? He's averaging 8.3 rebounds this year. Yes, he doesn't get 10 a game, but how many players get 10 rebounds a game? I'm going to say not that many. 24.5, 8.5, 2.2 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.8 blocks, and the kicker is 56-77 as his percentages. He is having a tremendous season. He is as healthy as he's... Well, not as healthy as he's been for a while, because he played 72 games last year. He played 74 games 2 years before that. 2 years before that, he played 82 games. This is his longest, best 2 year streak, though, in terms of games played. He has been fantastic, and he's coming on strong in the second half, exactly like he did last season when he was a legit top 10 guy for the last 2 months of the season. I reckon we're going to see it again. He is putting up massive, massive numbers on this team. His last four games is giving 26-8 with 2 steals and 2 blocks at 60-84. They're ridiculous numbers. He is extremely underappreciated and not under-respected. I don't think people realize just what he's actually doing, because he's on a team that is almost the most unwatchable team in the NBA. Just remember, if you ever think, if Lonnie Hollins ever gets coached or signed to your team as a coach, remember that for stretches last year, Lonnie Hollins played Mason Plumlee over Brook Lopez. And not because Lopez was injured, just because, well, we're going to run with the Plumlee as the starting center. And it wasn't a Jrue Holiday on the bench situation. It was you are the backup, Lopez, and you played 20 minutes a game. Or 24 minutes, and Plumlee will play more. That was Lonnie Hollins last season. He's not a good coach. Joe Johnson, 19-8-4. I think he has to be owned everywhere still. Don Sloan, I reckon he's probably approaching must-own territory. 33 minutes, 14-5-4. He's still not good, but that's 30 minutes or around 30 minutes in about the last 3 or 4 straight. Shane Larkin is definitely reduced to scraps at the moment. Sloan should be owned in most competitive leagues already, I would say, but in a 10-team league, you can consider him. Thad Young struggled, 8 points, but did give you 11 rebounds. And that wing morass of crapness, Markel Brown, Bojan Bogdanović, Wayne Ellington, 19 minutes for Ellington, 22 for Bogdanović, 22 for Markel Brown. Now, Brown had 3 steals, but all these guys are more your 14-team league guys. If I'm banking on anyone, Brown is the guy who's getting the most consistent minutes. At the moment, he's getting 20 in basically every game. He's really not great, but he can contribute in rebounds. He can be a good rebounder, and he can get you some steals. Now, he only had 1 rebound here, but 3 steals, and he can get hot and hit some threes. He's a guy that is probably playing the best out of those 3 at the moment. But if you have to pick from any of those guys, you know your league is either pretty deep or you're really struggling. On the Blazers, Damian Lillard, 34, 2-4, 3 steals, 2 triples, 14 of 14 from the line and 9 of 18 from the field. Mason Plumlee played 27 minutes and only scored 4 points, but he has been such an underrated source of assists this year. 13 rebounds and 5 dimes with 2 blocks. Alan Crabb only 25 minutes, 5-3 with 5 points, 3 assists, and 2 steals. And Al-Farouq Aminu went 10-5-4. Mo Harkless, bit of a stinker after putting up a big, big run of games. 18 minutes for him. That allowed Myers Leonard to play 12, and Noah Vonleh played 13. Harkless only had 4 points. He did block 2 shots. If you added him, I'm not just running out and dropping him, unless there's someone. If there's a Shelvin Mack out there, I'd go and add Mack. If Don Sloan's out there, I'd look at adding him over Harkless. Although they're quite different players, it's not just a shit game from Harkless, I'm dropping. It's Who do I want to add? Oh, Harkless had a shit game. Maybe I'll drop him. That's always the mentality you should really be looking at. Not finding players to drop. Not finding players to add so you can drop someone. It should be, I want to find someone to add because I want to make my team better, not so I can just get someone off my team. And it's a mentality that really does need to come. And it does help you build your teams a lot better. That is the five games from Tuesday. I'm going to take a quick break. Before I take a quick break, we're going to have a word from our sponsors, and then I'll be back to preview Wednesday's action from a DFS perspective. I saw your picture today, got me thinking about the things that I would say, but I know you're happy now and you're someplace far away, 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 and I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your old street and I wonder if we'll ever meet again. Without a second glance you turned your back, my friend. This is the end, the end, the end, and I can't pretend I'm ready to be your friend. So don't go, don't you know my face? I'm the one that made your heart race so, so long ago. And don't go, please take my hand. I'll take you to the place that we both met.
All right, guys, we are back. We're going to be looking at Wednesday's DFS action. There is a lot to get to because there are 10 games, so let's get straight into it. The New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers is the first game up. The Pacers are favored by 8. The total is 203 points. CJ Miles is currently considered questionable with that calf issue. I would be shocked if CJ Miles plays. He is far from a quick healer, so I don't think we're going to see him out there. Let's look at the point guards in this one. George Hill had an absolute stinker in the last game. Just put up 9 FanDuel points in 37 minutes. He is dealing with an elbow sprain though, so that is obviously a concern with his shooting. He's priced at 5,800. He's got a super matchup against the Knicks, but I'm not trusting him with an elbow issue to go out there and put up 30 points. Because if he puts up 30 fantasy points, then he's made value. Not sure I want to trust him. Definitely don't want to trust Jose Calderon and Jerry and Grant. Those guys can, I don't think we'll bother too much with talking too much about them. Here we go. Blangtang, again, just smashing the comments. Live interaction. It's amazing you guys have TV and internet in New Zealand or Australia or wherever you live. Cool. We only got TV probably 4 or 5 years ago, so it's pretty new to us. So we are pretty excited about it, Blangtang. I am in Australia here, but it's still pretty new. So if there's any hints you can give me about watching TV, it'd be much appreciated. So thank you for that question. Now, back to the game. The shooting guards. Aaron Aflalo at 4,800. No. Maybe in a tournament, but we know how his inconsistency goes. Monte Ellis was terrible in the last game. At 6,200, though, at a really good matchup, he's not horrific to play. He's averaging 26 across his last 5. He's averaging 30 across his last 3, including that game where he went about 1 for 182. Can you trust him? You can't trust him, but you can definitely look in the tournament because there's an opportunity for him to have a big night. Langston Galloway has struggled recently. He's only at 4,100, but I don't want to use him. No one else really stands out unless you're big on the Saša Vujačić train. At small forward, we've got Carmelo Anthony, we've got Paul George. Both guys looking really good. Now, you pay $600 less for Paul George, and that would swing me his direction. He's at 8,700. He's averaging over 40 in his last 5 games. He's averaging 42 across his last 3. He dropped 53 in the last game. Both these guys have got very similar production, but you're spending $600 less to get George, and that would swing up my way. Mallow's a great investment too at 9,300. He's basically a 45-point guy most nights. But if I can get Paul George and get 45 points as well and save $600, then I'm pretty okay with it. At the power forward position, Miles Turner at 50. We've got a battle of rookies here. Miles Turner and Kristaps
Porzingis.
Turner is at 5,700. Porzingis is at 7,300. Again, it's a $600 saving, and Turner has been probably more productive than Porzingis lately. Both guys, you can have their ups and downs, but I'd say that Turner is a little bit more solid at the moment, a little bit more consistent. But the problem is when power forwards play against either of them, they do get their production restricted. So it's going to happen to either of these guys. They are both good shot blockers. They're decent defenders and teams and playing for teams who have got decent front court defense as well. They're not great options, but Turner's a hard guy to steer clear of at only 5,700 when he's averaging over 30 across his last three, dropped to 27 in the last game. You feel like that 28 points is, you know, almost a baseline for him. Porzingis is very, very much up and down. He's probably got a higher ceiling than Turner, and maybe I'd look at him in a tournament, but if I'm picking between those two, I'm most likely going Turner's direction. The beast, Jan Mahinmi, at 5,100 has been on fire. That is not a high salary at all. The Knicks matchup looks scary, but at 5,100, I'm pretty confident that I can get 25 points out of Mahinmi. And on the other side of things, Robin Lopez has been destroying things. He is averaging 34 across his last three, 29 across his last five. He's now at 6,000, so the salary is a bit high, and he's in a similar boat to what Mahinmi is in that the Pacers restrict big men a lot as well. I don't hate using either of them, but I'm not saving $900. I'll take Mahinmi. And it's all about trying to get value for guys at the right price. The Charlotte Hornets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are favored by 8.5. The total is 205.5 points. Spencer Hawes has been ruled out for the Cavs already. On the he doesn't play for them anymore. On the Hornets, on the Cavs side of things, Iman Shumpert dealing with that shoulder problem still. We don't know if he'll play. Now, Kyrie Irving, his price has come down. He had that game where apparently he wasn't sick. He was dealing with a case of bed bug bites. Possibly the weirdest injury I've ever heard of in the NBA, but that's why he had to leave the game, because he was dealing with bed bug bites. That's the injury that Terrence Jones would have. But Kyrie's were up there as well for weird sort of stuff happening. His price has dropped like $400. He just dropped a 41-point fantasy game. The Hornets are sort of right in the middle in terms of defense against point guards. 7,300 for Kyrie Irving. Do you think he can get 35 points? I think he's a massive chance to get 31 points. In his last five, he's averaging 35 points, and he's had a game with 4 points in there. So that average would be way higher. I think he's an excellent guy to have a look at here. Kemba Walker, you pay 1,300 more for Kemba Walker. That feels like a lot more. I'm not going to be using Kemba. As good as Kemba's been, he's not worth 8,600. Not to me, anyway. He's been so consistent, though. His minimum score across his last five is 35. That's very impressive. Yeah, Kyrie's averaging 35 across his last five. But that's with a four-point game thrown in there. And we know the reason behind that. So don't look at Irving and go, oh, look at his consistency. It's terrible. Look at his mins and max. Such a big gap. It's because he had one game where he played 9 minutes. And if you take that out, then his consistency would be a lot different. Matthew Dellavedova, if Shumpert's out, he's going to get more minutes, but I don't think we need to get too interested in him. And for the real diehards out there, Jorge Gutierrez might make his Hornets debut. So I hope you're all excited for some Jorge time. At shooting guard, 4,800 for J.R. Smith. He's always a tournament option, especially if Shumpert happens to be out, but he's nothing more than that. Courtney Lee is a minimum salary player, but even that doesn't get me too excited, especially against Cleveland and their wing defense. Nick Batum has come back down to 6,800. He dropped 34 in the last game. That's not a bad score. He's averaging 36.5 across his last five at 6,800. I don't think he's going to be owned in many places. I think that this is a spot for him to have a really solid cash game, like 5X type performance. Jeremy Lin at 4,700 played 31 minutes in the last game. I'm not confident that he plays 31 because I think Courtney Lee moves up to 25 or 26. And Lin comes down to medium at about the same level. So I'm not sure that I want to use Lin at 4,700. With the small forwards in this one, LeBron at 9,900. I was talking about how good his consistency was, and then he goes and has an absolute stinker, putting up 29 points in the last one. I don't imagine we'll get another stinker like that. I think it's back over 40 for LeBron against the Hornets. The matchup is beautiful for him. He's had a day's rest in between, which is always good news. At 9,900... is less than 10,000. When you see star players drop under 10,000 and guys who are consistently over that, it becomes time to really pay attention. So I think LeBron against Charlotte here, 45 points is definitely appealing. And we've seen LeBron have big games when Michael Jordan's playing. Not I wish Jordan was playing. When Jordan is sitting there watching and he's going up against Jordan's team, Jordan might not be there, but it's still the Charlotte thing. And he's just bloody good value anyway, irrespective of all that. Now, Richard Jefferson, James Jones, I don't think we need to pay too much attention to those guys. At power forward, well, Tristan Thompson only saw 21 minutes in the last game with the addition of Channing Frye. We really need to see how that shakes out in this one. Is the 9 minutes that Frye got last game, is that just going to come straight off the top of Thompson's minutes, or is there other factors at play? That means we need to steer clear of Thompson in this one, unless you want to go real contrarian in a tournament and throw him out there. Same with Cody Zeller. He only played 22 minutes in the last one. Dealt with foul trouble. It's a horrible matchup for him. I want to see more of how this Al Jefferson situation plays out with him. And the value, though, comes from there's a big guy on each team who I think is decent. Kevin Love is more than decent. He is at 7,500. He dropped 35 in the last game. He's averaging 40 across his last three. This is a really positive matchup for him. At 7,500, that is not a big amount to spend on Kevin Love. I like him. And Marv Williams is at 5,600. Not so keen on him because the matchup's not good. And he's been a little bit inconsistent. But in a tournament, he's got 35-point upside at 5,600. And that can be really useful. With the centers, Al Jefferson, Tim Mozgov. I think we can move on to the next game. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 9.5 points. The total is 212. I reckon the Raptors are going to want to avenge the last game that they played the Timberwolves when they had a shock defeat. I hope everyone is sitting down at the moment. You all need to take a seat because now this is a shock and not many of you will be anticipating this. Nikola Pekovic has been ruled out for the next 3 weeks with ankle problems. It's a massive, massive shock, I know, but that's the case. So everyone who's hanging on Nikola Pekovic, it's not happening this season. It's not happening ever again for Nick Pekovic. It's unfortunate, but his ankles can't support a 7 foot, 350 pound man. It just happens. He's out. Nemanja Bjelica is out as well with a sore foot. Kevin Garnett won't play with his whatever's happening with him. Arthritis, I think it probably is, in his knee. Yeah, those guys are out, but it just means we're going to open more up, hopefully, for Tayshaun Prince. A lot of facetiousness there. It just hopefully means it's 35 minutes for Gorgui Dieng. But this is the game where Tayshaun Prince is back starting. This is the Tayshaun Prince game. So, tomfoolery will abound. Someone will lose minutes because Prince is going to go from 5 minutes to 20 minutes. So 15 minutes have to come off a deserving player. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Gorgui Dieng? Is it going to be Zach LaVine? Is it going to be Shabazz Muhammad? 15 minutes have to come from someone. And it is most likely going to be Dieng, but we need to wait and see. Hopefully not. Hopefully not. At point guard, Corey Joseph's at 4,200. It's a very positive matchup for him here. He's averaging 23 across his last three. At 4,200, you could do worse than him. You could probably do better. But if you're looking to save money at point guard, he's one of the options. I wouldn't recommend saving money at point guard on this slate. I think you have to spend up a little bit for it. Joseph would be the guy if I'm looking for a cheap one. Kyle Lowry at 8,900. He's been fantastic. Almost a 50-point game in the last one. He's averaging over 40. His lowest score in his last five is 32. He's priced under 9,000. That is not an expensive price for Kyle Lowry, and this matchup shouldn't scare him at all or anyone looking to own him. Rick Rubio's at 6,900. He's almost right on value, but against Kyle Lowry, that is not a great matchup for point guard, so I think we move on from him. At shooting guard, Zach LaVine is at 4,900, and even in the last game when Prince was playing, LaVine played 30-plus minutes, so that's good. The problem is he's not producing stats-wise. He's very consistent. His last five games, his lowest score has been 22. His highest score has been 26. And at 4,900, that's fine. That's basically 5x value guaranteed. But for tournaments, is it there? Eh, probably not. He can get hot, definitely. But there is a bit of a risk in this one. Maybe he loses 5 minutes for Prince. There's a possibility of that. But I'm okay with using him in cash games as that nice shooting guard option who can give you the 25 points and, you know, solidify 5x value from that spot. DeMar DeRozan's at 8,000. Beautiful matchup for him. There's 40 points written all over that for him. Andy Wiggins is at 66. At 6,000, he's very appealing. At 6,600, he's not quite there for me. He just hasn't proven that he can get there consistently enough. With the small forwards in this one, There's no one that all, it was all that exciting. Shabazz Muhammad, I look at 3,900, but then I say Tayshaun Prince is going to take minutes off someone, and maybe Shabazz loses some time there. Even when he plays well, his highest score has been just 26 across his last five, and he's about a 20-point average guy across those last five, which is okay, but it's not all that exciting. If you're looking for someone to give you 5.96 fantasy points, Tayshaun Prince is probably your guy. That's what he's averaged over the last five in 18 minutes, and he is going to thieve 20 minutes off someone tomorrow's games. Absolute thievery. The power forwards. Patrick Patterson is at 3,700. Tournament, you can hope that he gets hot, but I'm not putting any trust in that. Gorgui Dieng is at 6,400. What do we do with Dieng here? At 6,400, you feel confident that he can get 33 points if he plays 35 minutes. You feel confident that he can get to 35 points. Do you feel confident that he can play 35 minutes? After what happened the last time that Prince started, I'm a little bit cautious, but I think that I would go back and I would put him in a cash game lineup, and I would hope that we don't see Prince play 20 minutes, because they were brutal when Prince played. Absolutely horrible. But Sam Mitchell's, I don't even know what the right word is to say. He could do whatever's the right thing to do. He will probably do the opposite thing. Still, Dieng, I'd throw in tournaments, and I would be okay using him in a cash game. I just would hope that it wouldn't stuff me around too badly. At center, the beast, Karl-Anthony Towns, is at 9,200. That salary continues to rise, and he continues to push through in terms of value. He's averaging basically 45 across the last five games. His lowest score has been 34 at 9,200. Jonas Valanciunas' defense doesn't concern me too much with Towns. He played very well last time against the Raptors. He is definitely in consideration. Speaking of Valanciunas, he's at 6,700. He's been good, averaging 33 across his last five. But Is he right where I want him to be at 6,700? That feels just a little bit too high. I don't hate it, but I'm not convinced by it. The next game is the Golden State Warriors and the Miami Heat. The Warriors are favored by 9 on the road. The total is 215 points. Interesting to see if we see the debut of Anderson Varejao for the Warriors. That'll be a bit of a talking point. We're obviously not going to have Chris Bosh. We've had Beno Udrih ruled out for the rest of the season on the Heat, so that's another point guard down. Tyler Johnson's out. Beno Udrih's out. Goran Dragic is going to have a big second half of the season. A big second half. He's going to have to play extended minutes, and they're probably going to have to sign someone, but whoever they sign, hey, maybe Tony Roden goes to Miami. Dragic, big second half. Luol Deng suffered a dislocated finger. He is going to play, though. Injury-wise, not much else to talk about here. Dragic is at 6,400. He's been playing superbly, averaging 43 across his last three games. This is a great matchup as well for point guards. Love Dragic here. Steph Curry at 10,800. It feels like, look, the matchup and the ease is not good, but you feel like Curry can push through that. The thing is do they smash the Heat without their best player in Chris Bosh? And does Curry play 29 minutes? In his last five games, though, Steph Curry's lowest score has been 43 points. And at 10,800, that's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. You can always use Steph Curry. I do tend to steer clear of him in cash games, just because if he has a quiet one, and it can happen, then that's $11,000 worth, and you were banking on 55 points out of him, and he gives you 35. And it's a big drop-off. Can you get the 20 back somewhere else? It might be a little bit hard. But Curry's not a horrible option. I thought he was a real good play against Atlanta. I'm not so keen on him here. But if you play him, it's very hard for me to criticize you. At shooting guard, Dwayne Wade is overpriced at 7,300. I don't want to use him. Gerald Green, I'd throw into a tournament at 3,500. Although I doubt they start Gerald Green again. They might for spacing purposes. But if they're going to start him and play him 16 minutes, what's the point? Definitely don't want to deal with him in a cash game. So even if they say, we're starting Gerald Green, remember, he started the last game and played 16 minutes and scored 3 fantasy points. So a start does not equal massive contributions. Klay Thompson is at 7,200. He is almost a 40-point guy at the moment each night. He's 35 across his last 5 games. He is definitely in play to be used here. And I think we're going to see some more minutes from Josh Richardson, but we don't need to get too interested in using him DFS-wise. At small forward, Harry Barnes, not for me. Luol Deng at 5,800. Yeah, definitely fine with using him. He's averaging 43 across his last three games. He's on a huge run of productivity with Chris Bosh out. I think it continues to a degree, and he just needs to get to 30 points here, and I'm pretty sure he can get that. Justice Winslow's at 4,400. Fine with using him as well. Really productive over his last couple too. He's more of a tournament option than a cash game option though, so just be aware that he can have some fluctuations. At power forward, Draymond Green is at 8,400, much more appealing salary than the 9,400 we were seeing for him earlier on. At 8,400, can he get to 40 points? Yeah, there's a pretty big chance of it. I don't love him though. I'm more likely to throw him into a tournament than a cash game. Josh McRoberts is at 3,900. He is a great tournament option given his upside, but with Wade back, not convinced, and with Whiteside back, not convinced he gets enough minutes to be relevant. And there's just a lot of rubbish at the power forward spot from both these teams. Amari Stoudemire, Maurice Spates, those sort of guys. Hassan Whiteside is at 8,200. This is a beautiful matchup for him. He dropped 53 in the last game. He's averaging almost 40 across his last five. Definitely fine with deploying Hassan. Andrew Bogut would be great if we knew he'd play 28 minutes. The problem is we don't know that. Throw him into a tournament, you can get 30 points out of him pretty comfortably if he gets close or gets in the high 20s. If he doesn't, then we're talking 10 points. And that's the problem with Bogut, especially in a cash game sort of format. The next game is the Philadelphia 76ers and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 11. The total here is 207.5 points. TJ McConnell is doubtful with that ankle issue. And on the Detroit side, Stan Johnson is out for the next 2 weeks with that shoulder issue. He can be safely dropped in any redraft 12-team leagues, and I'd even be looking at dropping him in 14-team leagues. If he's out at this time coming into the playoffs and his role had been reduced anyway, then I don't see much point in really holding on to him. In the point guard matchup here, Reggie Jackson's at 6,800. Feels like a great guy to look at against the Sixers. He's averaging 35 across his last three. He can have some poor games, definitely, but I'm not worried about Van Gundy sitting him and letting Steve Blake get hot. So at 6,800 for Reggie Jackson, I'm fine with using him. Ish Smith's at 6,500. I would rather spend the 300 extra and use Jackson. Smith's not a bad option, but there are better options on the board. Isaiah Cannon is minimum salary. Yeah, cool. That's great. And Kendall Marshall's also a minimum salary, but even in an increased role, I don't think he's worth using. At shooting guard, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope hasn't really done much against the Sixers this year. He's at 5,400. I don't love him as an option. Yeah, he can get hot and hit threes, but I don't know if his upside's really high enough. Nick Stauskas, the Sixers shooting guard, I don't think he has much DFS appeal here. At small forward, Toby Harris is now gone up to 5,700, but that doesn't dissuade me from using him. He feels like a very solid cash game play who should get us 30 points on most nights. Marcus Morris is at 5,200. The salary's come down. Toby's has gone up. 5,200, still not making it too appealing for me. And 5,000 for Bob Cubb. Not a great defensive matchup for him here. He hasn't been producing to his salary recently. I reckon we'd leave him alone. Same with Hollis Thompson at 3,500 is not terrible, but you can do better. At power forward, and Nerlens Noel is at 6,800. I'm fine with keeping on using him. Not all that concerned about the Pistons, who have been good against power forwards, but a couple of injuries in that spot now. There's going to be more Marcus Morris, more Toby Harris. Nerlens Noel should be able to get past that and put up another 30 plus point performance. Jeremy Grant at 4,800, that feels a little high. Moving on to the centers, Andre Drummond, Jahlil Okafor. Drummond is at 8,600. Against the Sixers, he was massive in the last time he played them. 40 points feels like it should be the expectation. I love him here. And Jahlil Okafor at 66, not sure I want him going up against Drummond. And he's been okay lately, but had a couple of nice games and a couple of bursts, but I'm not all that interested in using him here. The next game is the Washington Wizards and the Chicago Bulls. There is no spread released for this one yet. Bradley Beal, he might not play because it is a back-to-back, so he could be out. I don't think that's going to be the case. And Gary Neal and Allen Anderson are both questionable. For the Bulls, Pau Gasol missed practice with an illness. He will play most likely, though, so I don't think we need to worry about Pau not suiting up. At point guard, Derrick Rose at 7,200. He has been crushing value lately, averaging over 37 in his last three games without Jimmy Butler. John Wall doesn't really worry me too much in terms of Rose's value. At 7,200, he is fine to use. Johnny Wall himself is at 9,800, and he's got a beautiful matchup going up against Rose. He dropped 50 today in his triple-double performance. At 9,800, he probably needs to get close to 50, though, to return value, and I'm not sure that I can expect him to go for 50 again. Yeah, he's a guy I'd probably steer away from. At shooting guard, Brad Beal, limited minutes. I don't think I'm going to be using him, but I don't. His opposite number, Etuan Moore, at 4,500. He did have 33 in the last game. That's probably above expectations. But at 4,500, can he get 24, 25 points? I think that is within the realms of possibility. So he's in my player pool. Garrett Temple isn't. Tony Snell isn't. Nor is Alan Anderson or Gary Neal. The small forwards, Otto Porter not getting it done. He's only at 5,300, but that's still probably 1,000 too high. So I don't want to go and use him. Mike Dunleavy, Doug McDermott, they're both under 4,000. Yeah, still not all that keen. I'd maybe throw Dougie in there, but probably not. At power forward, Bob Portis is someone to have a look at here. He's at 4,300. If Gasol is limited by his illness and plays 2 or 3 minutes less, maybe Portis gets them. But even recently, he's in his 24 minutes in his last five. He's averaging 23 points. Hasn't had any spectacular blow-up games, but he's just been a consistent low 20 scorer. And at 4,300, he's almost bang on 5x, so I don't mind him as a cheap power forward option. Taj Gibson's been struggling. He's at 5,000. I would much rather spend the 700 less on Portis at the moment than I would spend 5,000 on Gibson. Markieff Morris has a fantastic matchup against the Bulls. The Bulls' front court is terrible, but do you trust him? I don't just yet, so I would maybe look at it in a tournament if they decide to extend his minutes, but it's just not happening for him yet. Jared Dudley's at 4,600. I probably feel the same way about Dudley, to be honest, because of just uncertainty of which way they run with this role. So maybe I'd throw Dudley into a tournament, and that's about it, which is a shame because playing against the Bulls is a great boon if you're getting a big role. Speaking of a boon, Marcin Gortat's at 7,100. Fine with rolling him out there in any type of situation, cash or tournament. Playing against the Bulls is going to do wonders for his numbers, and he's already averaging over 36 in his last five. Powers at 9,000. Not loving it, considering he's ill. He's averaging 43 points over his last five, but I'm just probably steer clear here just with that illness. Makes me just a little bit concerned. Maybe they knock 2 or 3 minutes off his playing time. Maybe he's just a step slow on a few things, and that's not all that enticing to me. The Lakers and the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are favored by 8, and the total here is 205 points. Tony Allen is doubtful with his knee injury, and Larry Nance is questionable for this one. He's also questionable for the rest of the season, apparently. So we might not see Larry Nance again this year. We might see him in this game. The Lakers haven't elaborated on that so far. At the point guard spot in this one, Mike Conley is at 6,700. That still feels like a pretty nice price. It's not fantastic. He is averaging 31 across his last five and across his last three, despite an off game in the last one. He is someone that I would consider in both formats of the game. D'Angelo Russell's at 4,900. I'd throw him into a tournament, but this is not a good matchup for him. I don't love using him. And Jordy Clarkson, who's been playing really well, his salary is now up to 6,000. This is not the best matchup for him either. Now, 4,800 for Mario Chalmers is marginally appealing, but I reckon you can do better in other areas. At shooting guard, Lance Stephenson. What a matchup he has got in terms of ease. It's fantastic. With Tony Allen out, does he get 20-plus minutes again? He dropped 23 in 22 minutes in the other day. And at 3,600, you could do worse than putting Lance Stephenson into a tournament. He might have zero, but you could still do worse. Kobe Bryant at 6,500 feels too expensive for me. Lou Williams at 53 also feels expensive. And Nick Young at 36, hey, throw him into a tournament. We don't know what Byron Scott's going to do. Maybe he plays in big minutes and maybe something comes of it, but I wouldn't be all that thrilled about it. At small forward, Matt Barnes is at 4,700. He's got an easy matchup. This is a former team of his. He's going to be... the minutes have been there. That's what I'm trying to say. The shot hasn't been falling, and his production hasn't been there. He gets hot, we're talking 35 points plus. He's not a cash game option to me. He is more of a tournament option, but at that small salary, if you're looking for a cheap guy, the role is there. He just needs the shots to fall, and I think that he's got an opportunity for it to happen here against the Lakers defense, which is terrible. Vince Carter is at 3,800, and he is averaging 23 points over his last three. He played 31 minutes in the last game with Tony Allen out, with Courtney Lee gone, with Jeff Green gone. He's going to have to play some minutes. So 25 points for Vince Carter, it's not stupid. And you could definitely use him. And it might work out. PJ Hairston might start. He also might be really bad. PJ Hairston's highest score in his last five games, ladies and gentlemen, is 3.5 points. And it's in, and most of those games were starts. So, yeah, he is not an option. At power forward, Zach Randolph is at 6,400. Are you going up against the Lakers' bigs? It's a really, really good matchup for him. 6,400, he's averaging 34 points across the last five. He gets to that average, bang, you've done it at 6,400. So I do like him here. The other guy I look to is Brandon Bass. If Larry Nance happens to be out, Bass is at 3,800. And in the games where Nance has missed previously, Bass has played 30+. He might not get to 30. He might. I think we've got him at 27 minutes at the moment. But in 27 minutes at 3,800, does he give you 25 points? I don't think that's a stupid estimation. It might be on the high side. It's probably a ceiling for him. But at 3,800, that can be useful. Julius Randle at 6,100, he's very, very up and down. But I don't hate using him here. The problem is Memphis is quite good defensively. And that limits Bass as well. With the center position, Brandon Wright, he just hasn't got it going yet so far. Love the matchup. In a minimum salary spot in a tournament, sure, maybe he goes for 30. There's a chance that he could do that, but I'm definitely not using him in cash. And Chris Anderson, Roy Hibbert, and Tariq Black, I think those guys can be left for a rainy day. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks. The Thunder are favored by 4.5 points. The total is 215 here, so we're talking a pretty big, pretty high total game. The Thunder will be looking to bounce back after their loss the other day. David Lee will make his Mavericks debut. Doesn't mean we need to use him in DFS. Let's look at the point guard spot first. Darren Williams is at 6,000. I'm okay using Darren Williams against Russ Westbrook. Westbrook has been giving points back to point guards pretty regularly. If Williams can get 30 points, he's averaging it over his last three. He's averaging over that over his last five. As long as he stays on the court, Darren Williams is going to get 30 points. I'm in this matchup especially. Now, Russ Westbrook's at 10,900. He's almost a 50-point guy every single night, so he is always in play. Ray Felton at 46. Probably not. And J.J. Barea at 37. I don't think so. At the shooting guard spot, Wes Matthews at 4,200. Had a big game in the last one, but I'm not banking on that happening again. Dingle Waiters, no. Devin Harris, and Andre Robertson, Randy Foy, Anthony Morrow, none of those guys have any sort of DFS appeal to me. KD at 10,200, he's been a little bit quiet. Now, Chandler Parsons has been able to restrict other small forwards recently. Not sure that really applies to Durant all that much, but he's only averaging 38 across his last three. And at 10,000, that's not what you want to hear. He's also had a 65-point game in his last five, so that's obviously impressive. You can always throw Durant out there, and in tournaments, he'll be... He appears in the perfect lineup so often, but in cash games, there's a slight bit of risk associated with him. It's not dissuading me totally from using him, though. 6,700 for Chandler Parsons. He's averaging 30 across his last five games at 6,700. Not sure I want to use him, though, in a matchup against the Thunder. At the power forward position, Serge Ibaka is so up and down that I don't want any piece of using him. Dirk Nowitzki at 6,600, he's priced too high. And David Lee coming in at 4,100. I just want to see what his role is first. Maybe I'd throw him into a tournament, but I probably wouldn't. And the center matchup, we've got Enes Kanter at 5,000. He's always a chance for a double-double, so he's a tournament option. Steve Adams at 4,400, dropped 25 in the last game. He's averaging 20. He's a low-end, not a terrible cash game option. Not a great tournament option, though. And Zaza Pachulia at 5,800. Yeah, this is not a good matchup for him because Adams does restrict opposition centers pretty well, and then Ibaka when he plays there too. The Denver Nuggets and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 10. The total here is 213 points. Injury-wise, not much to really be too concerned about. Chris Paul against the Nuggets really appeals to me. He's at 9,800. I think that 50 points is clearly within play for Paul. He's averaging 49 across his last five anyway, and against the Nuggets team at a high pace with poor defense, he's in play. 5,600 for Emmanuel Mudiay, not against Chris Paul and not with the emergence of DJ Augustine. I don't want to use Augustine, but at 3,700, maybe you'd look at him, but probably not. At shooting guard, Gaz Harris, Will Barton, no. The Clippers have been just destroying opposition shooting guards in most nights. Their ease ranking is really, really negative in the red. Don't want to use either of those here. JJ Redick at 4,900. Jamal Crawford at 49. Now, Crawford was a terrible, terrible outing in the last one. Just barely played in that game against Phoenix. I imagine this game remains closer, and he plays closer to that 30-minute mark. And at 4,900, I could throw both of these guys into a tournament and see how it pans out. Not all that keen in using them in cash games, though. At small forward, Wes Johnson, been playing solidly, 4,500, a nice matchup for him here. Until we get Jeff Green really, really into the rotation and playing, then yeah, Johnson's going to have value, but we don't know when that's going to be. Maybe it's this game that Green plays 30 minutes or 28 minutes and Johnson goes back to 24. I don't want to use really either of them, Green or Johnson. I'll leave them both alone. Danilo Gallinari at 7,100, didn't play that well today. At 7,100 against the Clippers, I'm not all that excited about using him. At power forward, Ken Faried at 5,600. He exceeded value today, but hasn't been able to do that recently. Darrell Arthur is just a punt at 3,500, and maybe you throw him in, but generally you wouldn't. Now the center position. Nikola Jokic, he's at 5,600. He dropped almost 40 points today. He is always a chance in a tournament. He's probably a little bit risky in a cash game, but even then, I'm not all that concerned about him in a cash game. He's DeAndre Jordan, 8,700. That's a big salary. But in a matchup against Denver, I think 45 points is there for him. So he is definitely one of the best high-priced centers on the board. Yusuf Nurkic, Joffrey Lavernier, Cole Aldrich, I don't think there's much need in talking too much about them. The last game, the San Antonio Spurs and the Sacramento Kings. Kawhi Leonard is the big one here. He is questionable. If he doesn't play, which you'd think with a back-to-back coming up and against the Kings, he's not going to play both of them. There's going to be some value change there. I don't love any of these guys. Rajon Rondo at 9,200 against the Spurs scares me a lot. Patty Mills at 4,600. Yes, I would throw Patty Mills in there and see exactly what happens, because it could be a blowout. He could play 25 minutes. He is getting red hot, and he stays red hot when he gets red hot. So 4,600 for Patty Mills is something to look at. Tony Parker at 53 has been really productive, averaging almost 29 points in his last three games. Really consistent as well. But again, I don't love it here in a matchup where he might be limited. And I don't think Darren Collison at 2,500 makes the smartest investment in this sort of matchup. Shooting guard, Danny Green's at 4,500. There's a big chance for him to go big. He dropped 29 in the last game. This is a beautiful matchup, and I don't trust him in cash games, but in tournaments, I'm all for it. And there's no other shooting guards in this game really worth talking about. Small forward, Kawhi at 77. I would really like him in this one. I would love him if he played. So at the last game of the night with 10 games on, I don't think I want to plug him into a lineup like a FanDuel lineup and think, oh, yeah, maybe he's going to play, and then we hear later in the day, nah, sorry, he's not. That's not good for you. Kyle Anderson would be the beneficiary, but at 3,600, he even hasn't been producing a massive amount lately, so I don't think he's moving the needle either way. Rudy Gay, if Kawhi plays, no thanks. If Kawhi doesn't play at 7,100, all for it. I think 30-plus points is definitely within the realms of possibility for him. At power forward, LaMarcus Aldridge, really tasty matchup at 7,200 here. If you think the game's going to stay relatively close and LaMarcus is going to get 34 minutes at 7,200, I love it. If you think it's going to be a blowout and he plays less than 30, then obviously you hate it. David West, Boris Diaw, no. Willie Cauley-Stein, not getting enough minutes, and I don't love him against the Spurs. On the centers, DeMarcus Cousins on fire. He's averaging 57.9 across his last three games. He dropped another 55-point game today. He's at 10,900 though, and there is a bit of risk associated with using him, but the Spurs haven't been stopping centers much lately, so take that into consideration. You can still use DeMarcus Cousins. I think that another big game could be coming his way. Tim Duncan is not someone that I'm overly enthused to use. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day. A couple of them, I've talked about all of them already, and you got to exercise caution. Corey Joseph at 4,200. I don't think he's got a big ceiling, but he can be a cheap point guard option if you're looking for one. I don't think this is a slate where you should be looking for one. Goran Dragic is at 64, and Chris Paul's at 98. At shooting guard, Danny Green, 45. Nick Batum, 68. And DeMar DeRozan at 8,000. At the small forward position, Matt Barnes, 47. Toby Harris, 5,700. And Paul George, 87. Power forwards, Bob Porter's 43. Zach Randolph, 64. And K Love. I don't know why I just called him K-Love. I apologize. Kevin Love, 7,500. At center, Steven Adams, 4,400. Nikola Jokic, 56. And Andre Drummond, 8,600. We are done. Guys, thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you to everyone who subscribes to the podcast, who follows me on Twitter, who follows me on Instagram, who likes the Facebook page. Really, really great that you guys interact with me in all those areas. I'm happy to answer questions all the time. You guys know that. If you want to support the podcast, download SeatGeek and enter that promo code REDROCK, one word, that supports the podcast. Leave a review, that supports the podcast. Tell your mates, share it. Comment on the Facebook page, that gets it out to more people as well. The more you comment and start discussing with people on there, the more it gets out to people as well. And it's also a fun place to discuss things. And there's been a lot more discussion happening on there recently, which has been fantastic. I do really, really enjoy that. I'm going to try and make the Facebook page more active as well. So get over there to facebook.com/redrockbasketball. All right, we are done. Don't forget to check out basketballmonster.com. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.